Okay, I'm just going to wind it.
Okay.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast for exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Okay. You know, I might have just cut the intro. You know,
you
we'll
might
see.
Have, because there was nothing.
Yeah, we talked a little bit. You know,
we tried so hard.
it's very challenging. So, yeah. You know, at some point, you just got to call like you see it, and like it's just not going to work.
Yeah. You know, a lot of weeks we actually come in with more preparation for the intro than we do for our actual topic.
That's fair.
At least I do. I'm like, oh, a funny thing happened. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to really hold on to this.
You got to start taking notes on your phone. Mm-hmm. Intro topics.
Right. Yeah. Well, I do have notes on my phone for today because we recorded this episode a week ago.
Yeah.
And the tech didn't work.
That is true. So now we're back.
So
here
I'm
we
back
are.
With notes.
Yeah. Oh, well, before we get to our topic, what are we talking about? James Dobson. At this point, died a couple weeks ago, but talk about a little about legacy. A lot of people want to talk about his legacy, mm-hmm. So we'll get in line.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you've read anything, forget it all before the Beyond Sunday team comes in on James Dobson.
Right. Yeah. We are the ultimate authority on James Dobson's dubious legacy.
I think this actually next thing is really what would be our ultimate authority, and that is chip flavors.
We're probably good at this.
Yeah, I feel much more confident.
You're
in
playing
my
to our strengths.
in my ability here. Yeah.
I signed up for a nutritionist this morning, so hopefully she doesn't listen to this.
Yeah. Wait, what chips are on the nutritionist, you know, good list?
Kale chips. I don't know.
That's not chips.
Yeah. That's agree. That's not chips.
Ken, I want ate at Central Market. I got sandwiches there. Mm-hmm. They have very good sandwiches at Central Market HEB in Houston. And one guy sat down near us and ate 4 bags of kale chips. And that was his lunch.
That's not healthy at that point, though, because there's still the salt and the oil component to a kale
it
chip.
It was nuts.
Right.
And they're also disgusting.
Yeah, so, why not just eat fewer potato chips?
Or like something with like protein in it, at least. Right. You know, like
a little balance, maybe.
Yeah, but 4 bags of the kale chips.
Is he vegan, maybe? That feels like a vegan move.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a power move. You know, sure. Well, my sandwich was good.
If it was spinach, it would be a Popeye power move.
That's true.
Spinach chips.
All right, let's talk about chips. Flavored chips. Now, this is a Dutch company.
Flavored chips is a Dutch company?
It's in the Netherlands. A new player in the snack market, Rewind, has launched an unconventional product. 9-volt battery flavored corn chips.
What? Why?
It is capitalizing on nostalgic consumer experiences with a unique flavor profile.
The nostalgia of licking a battery.
The nostalgia of licking a battery. Like, you remember how great it was to lick a battery?
Are we nostalgic about that?
And you don't want to lick a battery now?
Right.
Chips.
Dutch chips.
Yeah.
It would be the Netherlands.
So this is what they're selling here. 9-volt battery flavored chip. Now, let me ask you, did you ever lick a battery?
I did. I think that's how my dad taught me about electricity.
By licking a battery?
Right. Like, this, it hurts. Don't stick your finger in the outlet, but lick this.
Yeah.
Not confusing.
Now, did you think, as you were licking that battery, I could use some dip.
Like,
a little guac or something on this. Yeah. And I think I'm in business. Yeah.
Right. Is this company making dips to go with their gross chips?
What would you want to dip a 9-volt battery into?
The trash can.
Yeah. we aim to create a tongue-tingling effect while maintaining a taste that sparks curiosity.
Okay.
This is from Matthias Larsson. This is the flavorologist.
What? Are they just messing with us?
Yeah, I mean, I assume this is like, we'll make something so ridiculous, it'll get our name out there quicker than just making good chips.
Right.
I mean, I guess it could be a, a marketing scheme. Because this launch boasts a shared memory from the 90s, transforming it into a snackable experience. Yeah, I don't get it. You know, this is
okay. We're the only period in human history that we were licking 9-volt batteries was the 90s.
Evidently,
I think it's ongoing, isn't it?
I don't know. Did the Gen Zers do the 9 volts?
We still have 9 volt batteries.
Are they just eating Tide Pods?
Yeah, they're too busy.
They're like a battery. Ugh.
Right.
Everything is rechargeable in my world.
Right.
Yes. So call me when I can lick my the USB-C.
Right. Or your like laptop battery. I don't know how that works.
What do you think? Do you want to try this?
No.
Yeah, of course not.
Like,
evidently, it's got like some citrus in there that supposedly makes a tingling effect when you eat it.
Like by burning the inside of your mouth?
I guess.
That's how it would have to work, right? Like just be so acidic that it is... It not compatible with the inside of your mouth.
It does contain no actual battery components.
Well, that's a relief.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt I was going to open up this chip, right, and hidden in the midst of it is a battery.
I'm going to recharge my Tesla with this bag of chips.
Okay. Is this a bold and innovative flavor profile that you're interested in?
No.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
But just for the pod, if we wanted to get a bag of these chips, how do we do it?
All right, I believe we can request a sample.
Because we're influencers.
Yeah, we're influencers. Yeah.
We should do it. We should email them and see if they'll send us a bag of these.
I'll see what I can do. If I can figure out a way for us to get the 9-volt battery.
Right.
Yeah, so finally. You know, the world has been waiting.
Right, we'll be able to.
The technology
that
is here.
Experience
that we've been thinking: can we make a chip taste like a battery? We can.
So they say.
Yeah, the really only thing that we need is a chip and a 9-volt battery, and you got to taste test it.
Right.
You know, close your eyes, and this is either a 9-volt battery or a chip.
Which one is it?
Which one is it?
Blind taste test. Yes.
That is the only way to figure out, is this going to work? Are there any other chip flavors from the 90s that you're a bit interested in bringing back that, you know, you tried as a kid?
I was thinking about Bugles the other day.
They're still around.
Yeah, I think Bugles are still hanging on.
Yeah, they're gas station food,
right?
They're road trip food. Yeah. Like, we're going on a road trip, and you're like, look at this. Look at my nails.
Right,
Bugles.
Exactly. Witch nails. So fun.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other things. Maybe, you know, like when I was a kid, when you took your cup and you filled it with every flavor from the fountain drink.
Yep.
It was called a suicide when I was a kid. Yep. I don't know if that's appropriate.
Probably not. Yeah. I think we're more sensitive to such topics now.
And I assume the suicide chip is probably not going to be the
next flavor.
Yeah, it's probably not going to get the buzz that I want for the, you know, but every flavor fountain drink combined into one chip.
Yeah. Yeah. Sonic used to be good. When I was growing up, Sonic is trash now, but they had the watermelon cream slush when I was coming of age, which was excellent, and the tater tot that was like not filled with weird pinkish cheese.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
All right. Putting you on blast, Sonic.
Yeah, Sonic. You let me down.
All right. All right, let's get to our main topic.
Main topic.
We're going to talk about James Dobson.
We are.
Yeah. So he died a few weeks ago at 91, and... You know, kind of a lot of talk since then about the legacy of James Dobson.
Mm-hmm.
When I think, you know, of modern evangelical influence, I mean, is James Dobson on the Mount Rushmore? Is he one of the four most important modern evangelicals?
Well, that depends on your perspective, I think.
Maybe. I mean, like...
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily the one you... like the most,
right? Yeah, like maybe, importance. What do we mean by that? Like,
had the most influence?
Yes,
over
biggest
modern
impact.
Evangelical.
That's gonna be what? Billy Graham.
Billy Graham is definitely up there, number one.
James Dobson.
Yeah. Pat Robertson.
Who was the I can't remember his name right now.
Yeah.
Ravi
Zacharias.
Zacharias.
Yeah,
I think
maybe.
He's up there as well.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, maybe. Hey, fourth spot's still open. Right. I'm going to toss my name in. I'm
apply
not
now.
I'm not an evangelical, but, right. But trust me,
but
guys,
I could be.
You want me up there. Yeah, yeah.
If the price is right. That hallowed tradition of evangelicism. I can be bought.
That's fair. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and maybe we're wrong. I mean, that's not really fully our world. By nature of being an American Christian, I think, like, I kind of, like, have a relatively good knowledge of the evangelical church and what's going on.
Yeah.
But it's not really my world.
Yeah, it's definitely not anymore.
Yeah.
For me, at least.
Yeah. So. But Billy Graham is 100% on there. That's a given.
He has to be, yeah.
That's a given. And I think James Dobson, you know, you could certainly make a case.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about his legacy here.
Okay.
All right. So he is, you know, founder of Focus on the Family, kind of the 90s TV/radio programming that was all about the family, right?
Yeah.
And he's not a pastor. He was a psychologist and professor and had, starting... First and foremost, family dynamics.
Yeah.
And I think what we mentioned previously on the podcast, not about James Dobson, but like he, you know, came of age in like the 50s and kind of saw like that husband working, wife homemaker, children dressed and seen and but not heard. And I mean, naturally saw that as like that's normal. Mm-hmm. Like that's the normal family.
Yeah.
Without necessarily thinking like that's kind of like historically and globally unusual.
Right.
Like that was almost never happening except for one time period.
Right. And yeah. I think even in that time period, I'm not a historian, so yeah. I can be corrected if I'm wrong here, but that was only normalized if you were a certain socioeconomic class,
sure.
You know, white, straight, male Protestant.
Sure.
You know? So
I am all of those things. So.
Right. So would have been a good time to be you.
Yeah, I missed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That really, if I was in the 50s, I definitely could have been on the Mount Rushmore then.
Right.
So, but yeah. And so I believe kind of his first kind of rise, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm not here a James Dobson historian, but from what I've read, is all about family discipline. This is how I first and foremost would know James Dobson,
yeah.
is his books and teachings on discipline. His first book, Dare to Discipline, I have read some of it,
mm-hmm.
or some other of his book on discipline. I don't know. It is long gone from any shelf that I've ever put it on.
Right.
But I have read some of it.
Yeah.
One of the things I genuinely remember from reading it that is like that he kind of mentions like when you're disciplining a child, you're disciplining for the child's sake,
yeah.
to help them grow, to help them learn, not for your sake, to punish or to be angry at your kid. And I was like, I think that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I agree. or I didn't have kids at the time, but I'm like, that sounds reasonable.
Right.
When you're disciplining a child, you're not trying to raise children, you're trying to raise adults. And like, so discipline is helpful to raise an adult,
mm-hmm.
to help show them how to do it. Now, then I stopped reading. You know?
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. Because a lot of his ideas on disciplining a child are going to be about corporal punishment.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
Yeah, 100%. And I, growing up in a more conservative branch of Christianity, I've heard that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
if you're basically, the idea is you should be spanking your children. And if you are not, you are not a good Christian parent.
Right.
Like that is not an option of discipline. It is the option
yeah.
of discipline.
Right.
And nothing should be kind of taken from that.
Yeah. I remember when we talked about this first last week. You said this about him being known for his book on discipline, and I was flabbergasted because that is not at all how I know
yeah.
James Dobson, right? And to me, like his influence, for better or worse, I'm going to think worse,
yeah.
is prolific and totally outside of that, right?
Yeah.
So this idea that he is like best known for a book on why you should spank your kids
yeah.
from the 70s was totally news to me.
Sure. Yeah.
And so that, you know, is a little bit of insight into, I think, just how much he had his claws into, maybe.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
That, you know, I also was kind of thinking, and I've had a week to think about this now, about how do I have a conversation about James Dobson in good faith. That is not just me like dragging a dead man
absolutely
on the internet, for sure. You know?
Yeah.
But is not also not like sweeping under the rug a lot of the very real harm that I think he's responsible for.
I agree. Yeah.
So to me, that conversation I think is maybe most interesting in talking about the dangers of following any spiritual guru, right?
100%.
Like anybody who packages something up and says, these are the answers for you, this is how you should live, you should be very wary of, I think. And we'll get more into that later, I think, in this conversation. But also, what does it look like when we have just high-level cultural buy-in to that set of ideology, right? I mean, we have that with James Dobson. Like, he was, you know, apparently most known for his discipline book, but it was so prolific that I still thought he was prolific without knowing about the discipline piece, which is his biggest piece, right?
Yeah. I think this is the beginning,
Right.
And so in that discipline stuff, I mean, he was saying things like, you not only should you be spanking your children at 6 months old, you should be spanking your
children. That's insanity to me, but okay.
And the reasoning behind it is, like, you need to squash rebellion against you in your children, because that will in turn squash rebellion against God as they get older.
Because whole healthy human beings are too difficult to deal with. We can't be raising those.
I mean, and so this is kind of like the first part, this corporal punishment idea. It's weird. I can say, growing up, I went to a Lutheran private school through fifth grade that practiced corporal punishment. The principal had a paddle on his wall.
This is wild.
That was gifted to him by a graduating fifth grade class. They families chipped in to buy a paddle.
Oh, it's so cute and sweet. Hit our kids with this.
Yes, and I can say, growing up in elementary school, I was paddled by the principal.
That's, So, have you talked to somebody about that?
Quite wild of a, growing up, right? That that's a thing that happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it squashed your rebellion against God?
No.
Right.
Absolutely not.
Right. That would have put it in the fast lane for me.
I believe, you know, that most child psychologists, and from what I've read and from what I've talked to other child to people who work in this field, that corporal punishment really is not the most effective form of punishment.
Right.
And many of them would say it's not even the most effective, it is not effective.
Right.
And that it kind of creates a conflicting message of, we don't hit except when I hit you. And that is, to a 3-year-old or a 6-year-old, a message that they can't quite understand.
Right, yeah.
And so since they can't understand it, it's not that really an effective tool. Now, you as a listener may have different values. You might think they're differently about what it means to raise a child. There's plenty of people out there that'll say, like, I was spanked and I'm fine. And I'm sure that they are correct.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not here to like challenge that thought or think these through. But I do want to challenge the idea that James Dobson would put out, which is, one, you need to do this to squash rebellion against God.
Mm-hmm.
And two, this is the only way to do that.
Right.
And I think both of those things are crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, to be fair, he showed us who he was right from the jump, right? Yeah. It was somebody who was gonna like really put things in a box and really hard black and white, yes or no.
Yeah.
Like that. And was who he, I think, remained for the rest of his career, his life.
Yeah. So, coming up, you know, writing in the 70s and 80s, you know, so this would be boomers starting to have kids, figuring out what it looks like to raise a family. Coming out of free love hippies, Vietnam era, and wanting more social and societal control from what came before. And so I'm sure that this was, they had an itch and this was a way to scratch it.
Right.
You know, this, they're looking for, how do I help my kids? How do I be a good parent? And this is what was there.
Right.
So, like, there you go. So yeah, that's my experience with spanking. Being paddled by my fifth grade principal.
Yeah. Yeah, thankfully my parents were early adopters of the gentle parenting method.
Sure. Yeah.
So, also, I was homeschooled, so.
So yeah. You did not gift your parents a, right, a paddle.
No. Was it like picking out my own hickory switch?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, like what have you been paddled with?
Yeah.
Is, you know, good, interesting question to ask people around our age. What,
it's an icebreaker. What have you been paddled with?
Yeah, a switch, a spoon, a shoe,
ruler.
A ruler. Yeah, like what? The closest object.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think from what I have seen in the paddling procedure, very rarely is it done with the for the child in mind. It's more.
No, it's whatever's at hand.
Yeah, I'm, you know, angry, I'm upset, I'm overwhelmed, and this is a way to kind of like squash this immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not well thought out. And again, that might be you as a listener. I'm not here to say
no.
That your parents were wrong or that you're wrong if that's how you choose to punish your children. I'm just, these are my personal values.
Right.
And what I personally have read. So.
Yeah. Let's talk about what else James Dobson
is
known
get there,
for.
Yeah.
Because this is the tip of the iceberg
to
me.
So in the 90s, focus on the family. That's the next thing. And
focus
that was a big, big deal. Now, they made movies. They made TV shows. They made radio programs. Mm-hmm. They were kind of a production company for conservative Christianity. And I'm not saying the things that they were producing were good.
Yeah, we did not say a good production company.
But they were definitely an early adopter of like a for us by us productions,
mm-hmm,
of like this is for Christian families by Christian families,
right?
And that's how they I recently listened to a podcast with Phil Vischer. He's the creator of VeggieTales, and he said first took VeggieTales to focus on the family.
Right.
They rejected it.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing about Phil is actually like remarkably nice, fairly liberal human.
Like, I like Phil a lot.
It's interesting.
He's a really good guy.
You would not have thought that just from growing up. You might have thought he was nice, but like you wouldn't have been like, oh, he's like a hardcore anti-racist and like, you know, all these other things.
Phil and I may not agree on everything, and I don't really know him, but I think we agree on enough.
Right.
Like that.
We could be friends. We could be cordial at a dinner party.
Absolutely. And like, we're definitely united on a lot of different things. Yeah. So
shout out to Phil.
Shout out to Phil. He's the voice of Bob the Tomato.
Oh.
And a lot of different characters on VeggieTales.
Yeah.
So
Bob is the nerdiest one, but
Bob is
it's
the
okay.
Yeah. Not Larry. He did not do Larry.
Yeah.
So that's another dude. All right. Well, anyway, so what do you think of a focus on the family?
Yeah. So I do have a lot of exposure to Focus on the Family.
Okay.
I mean, if you would have asked me the two things that I thought James Dobson was known for before we started having this conversation, I would have said Focus on the Family and Purity Culture. I think he has single-handedly done more to influence and push purity culture than any other person, I think, in living memory. But Focus on the Family was kind of in my sphere growing up, right? Like my parents would like look up song lyrics for popular songs on Focus on the Family. They would look up what Focus on the Family rated a movie before we went to go see it. Not because of the normal rating.
Sure,
because
they're rating for
anti-sex,
drugs, violence,
Christian,
cursing.
I don't know. I really don't know. But it's like stuff that you ostensibly might not want your kids to be exposed to if you're evangelical. And all this, you know, I'm saying this about growing up. My parents were not like super evangelical. I don't really know why they bought into the Focus on the Family thing. But it was a moment in time where I think everybody was doing it and was like, if you were a parent that was paying attention in the satanic panic, you know, you were going to tune in at least a couple times to Focus on the Family.
Absolutely.
I have a lot of like personal experience with that on the receiving end of it and being a child during that time frame. I also know people very well in my extended family who did not leave abusive marriages because they called the hotline and they said, oh, well, you know, can you prove infidelity? Is he beating you? If not, then, you know, biblically, you have to stay.
Yeah.
So stayed in, you know, situations that were very bad for them long term.
Yeah.
So that would be kind of my personal experience of Focus on the Family.
Yeah. I mean, I went to private school into the 90s. Mm-hmm. I went through second through fifth grade in private school. So I'm sure during that time I watched materials produced by Focus on the Family.
Yeah.
But I remember none of it. And so,
for the best.
Yeah. And I don't really have much connection to kind of like any of their things that they have produced. I don't have that same kind of story of like my parents were not using Focus on the Family as kind of like a tool to kind of figure out what to do. I was more religious than they were. So, but Like, I think it was a bit of a point in this 90s thing where one company was kind of having this massive influence of Christian thought.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned earlier, the idea of like, what do we do with spiritual gurus? So mm-hmm. this idea of like, I am looking at a complex world that is difficult to understand and a lot of things are happening, and one company, one person, one idea kind of can come in and say they're actually very simple solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an attractive thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's attractive for everyone. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like for conservative Christians, for the most atheist people in our world.
Yeah.
Like, I think it is an attractive thing to say there's one, here's a simple solution to a complex problem.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Focus on the Family was offering. And
yeah.
the simple solution is, you know, disciplining your kids, raising them in church, keeping the nuclear family intact, and making and squashing media influence
mm-hmm.
on your kids' lives. So getting rid of the records, our CDs.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, getting rid of this new television that no longer is mm-hmm. supporting family values, but anti-family values,
right.
Or movies, or even cartoons.
Yeah.
You know, like these cartoons have kids rebelling against their parents. You should not let your kids watch that.
Right.
You know, so like, you know, the big bad of the 90s was like The Simpsons.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a cartoon, looks like it's for kids, but it's bad. And in reality, now you're like, it's really not that bad.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's pretty tame.
Yeah.
You know, so.
You know, it's kind of interesting that like even in that like quest for like simplicity, right? There was no internal consistency in Focus
yeah.
on the Family, right? Many of their things that they pushed did not work, and they have come back now and said, oh no, these simple solutions do not work.
No,
there's
yeah.
what was the name of the organization that we were talking about that was like
I'll get there in a second.
Okay.
Yeah,
we're
yeah.
I'm
that's
ahead
a teaser,
of it.
Teaser.
A teaser. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, a lot of them did not work.
Yeah.
So I mean I think this is a me thing, right? I will say this is my two cents on something. I think I can probably back this up biblically. I'm not going to try right now because I haven't prepared, but I think you should be exceptionally wary of anybody or anything that comes to you and says, I can make this easy for you. It's one size fits all. This is how you should live. This is how you should approach this.
Yeah.
Like that's anybody who approaches the Bible as a book of answers and not a book of questions is somebody who you should not trust.
Yeah, I think that is the case. Like when it comes to like disciplining your kids, like I think like disciplining with your kid in mind is I think
it
a healthy
is
way to think.
Your kid.
Yeah, and every kid is different. Every mm-hmm. kid needs a different version or a different level of intensity or whatever that discipline looks like. And so part of being a parent, I think, is figuring that out. And that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you're going to discipline, it's not going to work. And
yeah.
like things are not easy to kind of wrap your head around and figure out. And so somebody coming in and saying like, here's the solution. This one size fits all
mm-hmm.
is going to work. And for, I think maybe some people it does work and it does fit and they're like, this fits like a glove, right? Like
right.
this works, this is exactly how it should fit. Kind of like how like, I read like military uniforms are like built for like basically like a 6 foot tall man.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, if it doesn't fit a woman, they blame the woman.
Right. And
like,
not the uniform.
A 5 foot five woman. Like
right.
it's her fault for not fitting in the uniform,
right.
But it's not built for her.
Right.
Like, and so like this one size fits all where it's not built for your family situation or your experience. Like, and then you feel it's my fault.
Right.
Like we're doing something wrong. And the reality is it's just not built for that.
Yeah.
And that could be, again, that could be anything. I think that was Focus on the Family, but that could be Instagram nutritionists who have
right.
like, this is how to eat healthy. And they have very simple rules, but it's
yeah.
it's complicated
yeah.
To eat healthy, or this is how to lose weight, or this is how to keep the spark alive in your marriage, or, you know, like
yeah.
simple things that like follow these 10 steps and it's going to work. And that's just not how life works.
Yeah, I think, you know, I would be interested to know what evangelical Christianity looked like before this time period, right? But it seemed like there was a push during the 80s, 90s to remove all sort of like room for gray area in evangelicism, right? It's like you're either on fire for the Lord, like following this list of thou shalt not to the letter, and that's what it looks like to be a Christian, or you're not, you know, and there's no like variability in what this human experience, what this experience of spirituality can look like for each one of us. Even at the same time that we're looking at the data from these one-size-fits-all programs, whatever they may be, and saying, oh, this does not work.
Yeah.
From a data perspective, absolutely, this does not work.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that's guaranteed to work is the Beyond Study podcast.
Obviously. Like, you should listen to us. We will tell you how to live your life. Yeah. Email if you have questions. Yeah. I'd be happy to provide feedback.
One of the things I'm best at is knowing how other people should be right. living their lives.
I'm also good at this.
I have no idea.
You're right.
Complete mystery.
We're not talking about my life.
But your life, I see it so clearly.
Right. So. Bird's eye view.
All right, let's talk about this last thing you mentioned, this idea of purity culture. And yes. We've done a podcast in the past. This was in the Katie days, so the B-E-M, you know.
Oh, before Elise McCarter, yes, thank you so much. The Dark Ages. Yeah. Just kidding. Katie's awesome.
Katie's great. And maybe it's worth a revisit. I don't want to necessarily get into all of it now, sure. but I do want to get into some of it. So I have an article that I'm going to reference here. This is from Religious News.
Mm-hmm.
Religion News Service. This is an opinion piece by Timothy Rodriguez, who writes, Dr. James Dobson's death ends a life but not a legacy of lies and harms. And he admits this is an opinion piece.
Going hard in the paint.
Yeah, he's going hard. And part of why I believe, you know, he is quite passionate about these legacy of harms and lies is that he was a person who's been hurt by James Dobson's thing directly. Timothy is a gay man and came of age during kind of these late 90s strategy. And so one of the things, you know, that James Dobson was doing at the time as part of like this purity culture stuff was tackling homosexuality head on.
Yeah.
Because now a rise in homosexual acceptance in society coming in the late 90s, Ellen kissed a woman on TV and there were some gay side characters in movies occasionally, you know, like these things were happening. And so like, obviously,
there goes the neighborhood.
Yeah. Focus on the family's like, we got to address this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they launched a ministry, with this guy named John Polk, an ex-gay man, who launched Love One Out. And he was married to Annie, an ex-gay woman. They were married together and they would go on stage and tour and talk about their conversion.
How does this story end, Patrick?
Not great.
Yeah. That would be my guess.
Yeah. Years later, John Polk, the guy I mentioned, came out as gay again. Like,
of course.
And ultimately said, like, I lied constantly. Like, I was on the floor before going on stage, like, shivering, vomiting, hating myself.
Yeah.
And then I'd put on a suit and go on stage and lie and say that I was converted or cured or whatever the language was. Yeah. He said, I lied to the people I preached to, but I was lying to myself the most. I'd become brainwashed by the false narrative that sexual orientation was changeable when it was not. Mm-hmm. And every headline that proclaimed me cured drove me deeper into despair because I knew the truth hadn't budged. That's from John Polk. And then from that, a new organization was launched, and that one did 15 years of conversion therapy. And then ultimately, the person in charge said it didn't work.
Right. We have the data now. We've reviewed it. And guess what?
Yeah. Love One Out became Exodus International. And they said it's not working.
Right.
And then it immediately shut down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It shut down after the person running it came out and said that it wasn't working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure and apologized for the harm that it caused.
Yeah.
So at least like, not necessarily a happy ending, but maybe the happiest possible ending.
Some ownership from a person involved in high levels, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. I mean, that's part of it. And then John's ex-wife, Annie, still kind of has her own program that basically preaches the evangelical solution to the homosexual, you know, congregation or people in front of them is abstinence.
I hate that.
It's kind of lifelong celibacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, is that a step better than conversion therapy? I don't know. No. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to throw any kind of even minimal support behind that. But okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this is a part of this kind of purity culture purpose of like the idea of like we're going to address sexual issues head on and ultimately they failed. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
Right.
Like this was a failure across the board. Even if you are a believer in what John Polk and Exodus International were saying,
mm-hmm.
it was a failure. Like they're saying it's not working. Like they say, I was shivering on the floor, crying before lying to people on stage. Mm. And like, this is what the people at the top of this program are saying. Now, maybe there's somebody out there. So like, I went to this program and I feel like I'm a changed person on the other end. I have
no
idea.
Maybe. Like there's the possibility that exists. Like,
yes, yeah, so I'm not here to challenge their point of view
or
anything like that. I'm saying the people at the top are like, we failed.
Right.
And we did harm.
Yeah.
And I agree.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, but I think this is part of it, right? Like this idea of like parents scared because now more kids are coming out of the closet and culture is not suppressing them.
Yeah.
And they're scared of what this means for them, their church family, their grandma and grandpa.
Yeah.
You know, people grew up in a very different world in a very different situation. They're scared and they're saying, what are the answers? And here comes James Dobson and Focus on the Family.
Right.
And saying, this is the answer. And again, I think this is the danger of this when one organization is saying, we have the answers to everything.
Right.
And there we go.
Yeah.
And then ultimately on the floor crying, you know, like that's where we end up. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Any other thoughts kind of on this?
Yeah. You know, I've been thinking a lot about the phenomenon that when things change culturally and you have things shifts, like more gay kids are more comfortable coming out.
Yeah.
That as evangelical Christians, the answer seems to be that the problem is the gay kids who feel comfortable coming out.
Absolutely.
Instead of the messaging or the frameworks that have been in place that make that a problem, that make them uncomfortable in who they were to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, how far back do we think we have to go to that fork in the road, right?
Sure.
Where that became the way that we thought about things.
Yeah. I don't know. And I'm not quite sure. You know, like, I can easily admit that the world is very different in 2025 than it was in 1998 when Love Won Out was launched.
Totally.
That the culture is different. Societal acceptance is different. That when it comes to questions of sexual ethics and LGBTQ issues, it's a very different world, completely different. Even liberal politicians were not necessarily against the Love Won Out kind of campaign.
Right, yeah.
So like, it's not like there was always a divide, but now there is, and now we see that. So I don't know exactly like what we can point to or what we can trace, but I think we can point to that Focus on the Family, James Dobson likely was staunchly against.
Mm-hmm.
And it did create kids in that environment, I think, a lot of hurt and a lot of hardships and a lot of families that were torn apart.
Yeah.
And for an organization that is about family values and strengthening, supporting, and encouraging the family, I think that this is one area where it definitively failed.
Yep.
And again, you might, as a listener, might be like, we listen to Focus on the Family. We had great experiences as a family together. And I think that is very possible.
It is possible.
And true for you.
Yeah.
But this is an area where those families were failed.
Yep.
And so one of the things I can say maybe I appreciate about James Dobson is I think focusing on your family matters. Like, I agree. Yeah. You should focus on your family.
Your family.
Yeah.
Yours.
Your family matters. Yeah. And your family values are important. And how you install and ingrain, how you support one another is an important thing.
But don't let James Dobson tell you what your family should look like.
Yeah, but yeah.
Boom. Roasted.
Nobody else should come in to say this is what your family right. should look like. In the same way, I don't want for evangelical families to feel like somebody else is coming in and telling them what their families right. should look like and how their family should operate and mm-hmm. how they should kind of do things. I think there should be education. I think there should be awareness, but like every family is unique and every family can be very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And some look like two parents and two kids and some don't.
Right.
You know, some look like, yeah, a mom and a dad, and some look drastically different. And that is okay.
Yeah.
And that we can still focus on the family in the midst of this changing culture.
Right.
So, all right. I've got no more thoughts on James Dobson.
I would like to not think anymore about James Dobson, I think.
And that is fair.
Let us put him to rest.
All right. Well, if you liked or did not like what you heard, our podcast email is beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. Let us know. Pastor David is right around the corner from coming back.
Ooh, when's he back?
I think two-ish weeks.
Two-ish. Okay. It's an enigma.
Yeah, I believe in 2 weeks he'll be okay. back. So
all right.
Next week we still will have one more without him, and then I believe should be back rocking and rolling after that.
Rocking and rolling.
Coming out of sabbatical with a tan, you know, long hair.
Does he have a tan?
Probably not.
No.
Yeah. You know, but ready to go.
Yep.
I'm putting it out there. So.
I hope so. I hope he comes in and we don't even recognize him.
Yeah. Maybe we'll be all tattooed up.
That'd be great. Sleeves.
Sleeves. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.